You're listening to Proven Perspectives, a podcast with John Hawkins, the founder of Leadership Edge Incorporated. I'm Laura, John's daughter, and in each episode, we will explore a topic related to life, leadership, or mentoring. Through nearly 50 years of faith in Christ, John has learned proven life and leadership perspectives that will equip listeners for a lifestyle of leadership in their marriages, families, careers, communities, and churches.
Hi, Laura. It's great to hear your voice today.
Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. It is going great. Big week for the Hoovers, I think. I believe we have an anniversary and a birthday this week. Is that right?
Yeah. So we just had our 13th anniversary. That was fun. And you guys babysat, which was super kind. And then, Barrett turned 7 on Saturday. So, Gosh. Yeah, it is a big, fun week.
I cannot even believe that. Well, babysitting your kids, and for our listeners to know the real truth, Janet, my wife, did most of the babysitting, and I kind of showed up right as they were going to bed. But I did get to tuck them in, and that was quite an adventure. Your kids come up with everything known to man to do before they actually get in bed.
Yeah, I was pretty amused. You just told me that they all chose their clothing for the next day, which is a new part of the routine, so that's pretty funny.
Well, honestly, with Barrett, I was thinking, I don't think you've probably ever done this before, but anyway, it was fun. Well,
good to be prepared.
For our listeners, our regular listeners, you'll notice that we've started this podcast off differently today. Usually, Laura is the host, and she hosts us through the episode, and I get to share some ideas or work with guests we have. But we're switching roles today, and I'm the host, and Laura is the guest, and she will be sharing with us some just wonderfully important and really strong things that God has been teaching her recently. So I want us to jump in, but Laura, I feel like our listeners probably know a lot more about me than they know about you. And so I was wanting for you to just give like a brief summary of your life, maybe beginning with college.
Okay.
And kind of from college on, what has your life been like?
Okay. Well, yeah, I went to Baylor for college. So that's in Waco, Texas. And I got an education degree with a specialization in English education. So then after college, I taught middle school in Wichita, Kansas for 3 years and was a part of a really great church and got some training there. And then at the end of my second year of teaching, I had my summers off as a teacher. And so I came to California and was interning with a couple who was planting a church in Burbank, which is kind of close to Hollywood. And so that is a fateful summer that I met my husband, Adam. I guess fateful is not the word. But anyways, that's the summer I met Adam. And so we did long distance for a year. He was already living out here and works as an attorney, but worked with the youth group at his church as well. And so anyways, we spent a lot of time together in California that summer. I went back to Kansas for the school year and then ended up moving out here in the summer of 2008. We've been involved with two great churches out here. We were at Pierpoint for 5 years, and now we've been at Seabreeze for 9 years. And we have an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 5-year-old, and at the time of this recording, at least, we have a 1-month-old foster daughter who is super sweet.
Yeah. Boy, you've packed a lot into those years. You know, Laura, when I heard you talk about that you went to Baylor, I was thinking we should do one podcast on the day we left you at Baylor.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That was just more emotion than I think our family has ever felt.
Yeah, ever. I just remember getting out of the car and being like, I can't believe they're actually leaving. Like, wow, this is really going to happen now.
So. Yeah. Anyhow, but I guess we digress.
So, lots has happened since then.
So with the Hoover's house, with the kids and Adam's job and all that you do with the kids and your home and with friends and everything, give us like a picture of a normal day, a normal week at the Hoover House.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting. I feel like we maybe more have like rhythms than like a daily schedule. It's very, feels very in flux a lot of times, but we are, we're homeschooling our kids. So most mornings and increasingly in the early afternoon, we spend that time doing school. So we have three kids in elementary school now. And then Adam, actually, since COVID, works primarily from home. So he's kind of in and out, which I love, and our kids do too. And so we usually, the kids and I will get out a few times a week for play dates. And then on Fridays, we're part of a Classical Conversations homeschool co-op. Mm-hmm. We have church at Seabreeze on Sunday mornings. You know, other things that are part of most weeks, we get to see you guys usually for at least one meal. And Adam and I are both involved with Bible studies with our church, and our kids are about to start basketball. And then I just mentioned this, but this past summer we started foster care. And so when we have a baby at our house, usually there's a few other appointments each week, with that. So yeah, that's kind of what our weeks tend to look like right now.
Yeah, boy. And they are flat out busy. When I come over to your house, it's just lots of things moving at once. And
it's a lot of fun, but yeah, it is a lot going on. Yeah.
And I know, Laura, you would deny this to the hilt, but you always just seem so calm. Like you just always seem so calm and like you know what you're doing and all that stuff.
Well, as we record a podcast on my anxiety struggles, so maybe that's a little more external. But yeah, and I do think that God is doing that in me. So that's definitely a God thing and not my natural disposition for sure. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And just a shout out to your husband and my son-in-law and friend Adam. He's the best. I'm grateful to God for Adam. But I know today we're going to be talking about some lessons you've learned about trusting God, seeing His faithfulness, kind of in a time that some would call a dark night of the soul. We're calling this episode Anxiety and Looking Up. And Laura, I know about 4 or 5 years ago, you were at a crisis point.
Yeah.
And would you tell us about what I'm calling the dark Sunday and what it was like for you then?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and I guess I'll back up a little bit before that Sunday. But yeah, sure. I mean, in 2017, basically, I just had this crippling battle with anxiety. And I would say the low point was March of 2017. I think things had been building up for a while. You know, I had three kids, three and under, and it was a physically demanding season. And I think kind of the way that this all started was I would be up during the night with one of the kids and then would just kind of, my mind would just start racing. I've always been a thinker, probably an overthinker. And so, yeah, I would just get to these kind of spin cycles where the kids would go back to sleep, but I would be awake for hours. And eventually this was happening almost every night. So finally, in early March of 2017, I did have a week where I slept. I slept one night that week. And at the end of that week, so that was the Sunday that you're talking about. Yeah. It was just before Easter. And by that Sunday, I was a mess. I remember sitting in church next to Adam. And I remember I had to put my church bulletin down because as I was trying to hold it and take notes, my hand was just like flapping, you know, in the wind, like shaking so bad. The muscles in my legs were twitching. My whole body was shaking. And finally, I was so like nervous and I just couldn't stand it anymore. And so I remember going to the bathroom and going into one of the stalls and just sending my mom a text and saying, "Hey, can you please come out here?" And so the next morning she got on an airplane in North Carolina and came out to take care of me and my family. It was very a humbling place to come to. And I was so appreciative of her doing that. But, you know, you never want to be a mom and a wife who just can't handle your business, you know? So I think Adam and I both think that if I'd gone one more day without sleep, I would have been hospitalized. It was really bad. So yeah, that was kind of where it got to.
Yeah. Gosh, that is just horrible to think about again. But you know, Lars, as you think about it and think about, you know, the life you had lived before then in terms of, you know, growing up and teenage years and 20s and into your 30s, what are the things that you can look at now and think were kind of the lead up for you to get to where you got to at that period? What led up to that?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And I mean, as someone who walked with me through that season, I know you know, yeah. At the time, I had no idea, you know, like it was like, I felt like from day to day, I would think it was a chemical imbalance to like a postpartum thing to spiritual attack or result of, you know, it took a while to discern all of that, I guess. But, you know, I think sometimes I've thought about my life, at least at that season, as kind of an IKEA show home. So like, just kind of, you walk around the IKEA displays, you know, and it looks good. And maybe even some parts of it even kind of seem aspirational, like, oh yeah, I should try that, you know. But if you actually tried to cook dinner for your family in that kitchen, there would be, you know, these big problems because yeah. The burner knobs aren't connected to gas and there's no running water, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think in that season of life, I was putting a lot of energy and focus on the externals and looking good. And so even though I definitely was a Christian, I think I had built a life that was oriented around control and moralism. And so I felt secure when I did the right things. And I bet, Dad, you could probably see a lot more of this than I could, but, the main way that I determined what the right things were was what other people that I respected thought about me. And so, for a while, performing and people-pleasing sort of worked, you know. I could kind of figure out what the expectations were and then do that. And because it looked right, I didn't actually realize how much of my faith was in myself instead of in Christ. But looking back, I can see some indicators that my faith was rooted more in me than in Christ. For example, like, and actually, Dad, you in some ways helped me to see this. And I also saw a difference in your life and Adam's life and your walks with God and mine. And that was kind of one of the early, like, what's going on here? Because for me, spiritual disciplines were all about I should. And Adam pointed that out at a certain point during my crisis. But he said that as he listened to me, it was kind of all about, oh, I should get up and have my quiet time. Oh, I ought to pray more. Oh, I feel convicted that I should memorize more verses. You know, like that kind yeah. of stuff. And honestly, I think sometimes in your walk with God, that is, you know, you just have to get up and do it, yep. just like any committed relationship. But I think that this was kind of a consistent, like, part of my Christian life that indicated really that my faith was driven more by duty than joy in God, and that mm-hmm. it was focused more on me than on God and kind of mm-hmm. like what I was going to do. And then kind of one other piece. So I think a lot of it was driven by my self-reliance and performance drive. But then mm-hmm. also this was a season where there was just a lot of pain in the lives of people that I cared about. And mm-hmm. so in the year before, I kind of bottomed out. Some dear Christian friends went through a divorce. Someone close to me was struggling with addiction and mental illness and suicidal thoughts. And I also saw you, Dad, and Mom go through a difficult season, even though you'd been walking with God throughout your life. And so I think I was just realizing, both for me and for my kids, that this world was a hard place and there weren't really the kind of formulas that I was looking for to guarantee the results that I would have hoped for. So, I mean, that's what I saw. Does that fit with how you saw it?
Yeah, well, you know, as you know, at that time we were in North Carolina, and so I didn't really have a sense of things.
Yeah.
We would talk, or maybe we would be out here on a trip and visit you, but I guess, living with you enough to really get much of a sense. And
yeah.
And again, I will say, Adam just was, he, by his trust in the Lord, he very much was the man that God would have him be and the man that you needed in terms of walking through this with you. In fact, it'd be interesting if sometime we did a podcast with Adam and just had him tell kind of his side of the story. Like,
totally.
What was he thinking about? How was he figuring this out as he went? So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely seems right, but I don't think I had really good sense of that, like I would if it was now, because we live out here. And you know, Laura, a couple of times in my life, when I was 31 years old and then when I was 62 years old, I went through kind of a crash and burn kind of season of life in my life. Kind of thought about, I wonder if I do this every 31 years.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, okay, 93.
93. So if I'm still around at 93, we'll see what crisis I'm in.
Right. We'll stick real close.
But, you know, I think those were years for me of difficulties, of some definite kind of wrong thinking, some sin in my life, and just kind of things that God, out of his love for me, really wanted to kind of move me through. But it took a lot of time and a lot of pain to learn the things about him, to learn things about me, learn the things about life that he was wanting me to learn. And so I guess from that Sunday until now, or that period until now, you know, what, as you look back on it now, what were the things you think God wanted you to learn from it? And you've kind of alluded to some of that in what you've said, but maybe bullet point some of those things out in terms of what God was wanting you to learn.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and I think, I have so many thoughts, because I think there was a lot that I needed to learn and some things I'm still learning. But I think a lot of it had to do with learning to more accurately understand who God is. And maybe I'll talk about that a little bit more later, because I think that was, I mean, the biggest thing was kind of growing in my understanding of who God was and what he had already done for me, but then also learning what to do with my thoughts and emotions. And so, you know, one thing that encouraged me in this season was a couple of sermons by Charles Spurgeon that I had read. And he was a pastor. I know you know this. He was a pastor in London in the 1800s. He was known as like the Prince of Preachers. And, you know, as you read his writings, you can tell that he really knew God and knew him deeply. And yet he has alluded to in his writings, like, I think he struggled with several major depressive episodes in his adult life. And
absolutely.
So, yeah. And so Spurgeon talked about learning basically to tell your soul what to believe based on the model of David and the Psalms. And I know Martin Lloyd-Jones has talked about this too. But basically, instead of believing every emotion or thought that I had, I needed to learn to direct my heart and my mind to believe what was actually true. And so, and that's truth, obviously, that lines up with scripture. So I think one of the challenges at that time was, because of my insomnia and anxiety, my mind was kind of racing. And so it was hard for me to even kind of unwind, like, what all I was thinking. And so our pastor Bevan and his wife Rebecca, who Rebecca was really a faithful friend to me during that season, but I mean, and now, shared with Adam and I a really helpful tool called a thought inventory. And so basically this just helped me, first of all, get clear on what I even was thinking, like why I was so anxious. And so all that's required for a thought inventory is just a couple of sheets of paper, because then you just start writing down the thoughts that you're having. And so, you know, I did this for a couple of days. But then at the end of that period, I had a lot of different thoughts written down that fit into a few different categories. And then I found verses to combat the lies with truth. So one example of this is, like, I was having a lot of fatalistic thoughts, like, life is never going to get better. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that thought could be grouped with other fatalistic thoughts like, you know, I could never change, or despite my best efforts, I seem doomed to repeat history. You know, these are like actual thoughts I had written down. And so that seemed real and that seemed true, but that wasn't true. And so I found Philippians 1:6. It says, I'm sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Christ Jesus. And yes. So, yeah, I mean, such a good verse. And so that, I did that with a few different, I mean, it was, I think, six different categories of lies that I was believing, and then six different verses, and I put those into a Bible memory app. But just kind of beginning to develop a habit of, as soon as I recognized that I was believing a lie, shutting that down. So mm-hmm. That helped a lot. And then you've already talked about this, but yeah, a lot of what happened in my heart happened through conversations with Adam on our couch after our kids went to bed, because, you know, obviously Adam could see things were not going, were not going well. Yeah. So he just started asking me a lot of questions, and he was really patient. And I think over time, I think he had kind of recognized this for a while in me, but it became crystallized. I just really didn't understand the grace of God. So he started kind of just talking to me over, like sharing with me over and over, you know, like what the gospel meant. And that, and again, I believed it was true, but I think this season of life kind of brought so many of my issues to the surface that I was just horrified. And yes. I just couldn't get over my shame and my self-hatred as I saw like who I actually was. And so I couldn't believe that God, like, as I could believe that God had forgiven who I had previously thought I was.
Yeah.
But now it was like, this is just too much, you know? So like just the anger I was struggling with my kids, and just trying to control Adam, and just in every area, there's just so much poison kind of welling up. So he just, I mean, we probably had 400 conversations like this, but of just him telling me like, you know, this is what the grace of God is, and this is how it connects to what you're saying tonight. And so I think through those conversations and conversations with you, and then a couple of books that really helped me, I began to learn how my thoughts practically connected with the gospel, and just how to take what I was actually thinking and filter it through, like, well, is this like true? Is this, does this fit with the truth of what Jesus did for me? You know? So I think those were a couple of the big things.
Yeah, that's so good. And it's interesting. You know, the thing about, I guess, practicing self-control related to your thoughts and mm-hmm. using your thoughts as triggers to mm-hmm. kind of, you know, remind you, is this true or not? Does this fit with the Bible or not? You know, You can hear that, you know, our listeners could hear that as being, well, you just kind of, you know, stoically just control yourself better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're saying is, yeah, there definitely was a role for you to play in terms of like monitoring your thoughts and taking your thoughts captive, you know, to the gospel and all that. But it wasn't just a willful, I'm going to push through this. It was
right.
Also linked at a time where the grace of God is becoming more real to you than ever before. And that's just a great combination, I think.
Yeah, no, totally. You're exactly right. Because it was, first of all, I could not have willpowered myself out of that situation. Like, there's absolutely no chance that that's what it was. God really was merciful to me. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, this was a time of just seeing God's mercy. Yeah, and him really being near to me in the midst of this. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I was thinking about Job at the end of the book of Job, after he has suffered greatly and God has appeared to him. And and appeared to him in a way that was really the kindness of God, but it was a pretty stern appearance of the Lord at the end.
Yeah.
Job says, I know that you, referring to God, I know that you can do all things. No purpose of yours will be thwarted. And then a few sentences later, he says, you know, my ears had heard of you in the past, but now my eyes have seen you. And it's kind of the sense that I have learned some things about you, God, through this that I had never known or ever seen before. Just want to ask you, as we're kind of moving towards the close, is there one thing or maybe a cluster of things that you've learned just about God through what you went through with the anxiety?
Yeah. Well, and I feel like you kind of alluded to this a minute ago, but I think I just experienced the unbelievable mercy of God towards a woman who couldn't save herself. You know, like I was trying for so long to hold it together and I just couldn't hold it together. Like none of my strategies for controlling life were working. And I was so confused in my thinking, and I was so completely unable to change myself at the like root level where change needed to happen. And God, in the midst of that, reached down and saved me.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And so I know, like, I absolutely know that I didn't save myself. There's just, I mean, you knew what it was like then. There's no way that I did that, you know? And so I think that just changed, like, experiencing that day after day of like my inability and God's faithfulness to come through for me, like day by day, moment by moment, like answers to prayer. You know, I think one, it was a really dark, severe season in some ways, but he didn't allow me to be overcome by the darkness completely. Yes. And I know that was him, because there were a couple of times where I feel like my grip on sanity was right on the edge, and he just held on to me.
Yes, he did.
He provided a lot of help tangibly for me and my family. He spoke to me through his word. I think, you know, the Bible really became a lifeline to me during that season. And I think, you know, at the beginning, I talked a little bit about just how dutiful and kind of a lot of times joyless my faith was before this. But this season was when God really became a dear friend to me. And I think that was kind of the beginning of that shift from, you know, being dutiful towards God to really like loving him and experiencing joy in him. Because I think, you know, before my crisis, talking to God wasn't a great comfort. I would kind of gravitate more towards people if I had something that was going on. I didn't feel a lot of emotion towards God. But my insomnia really changed that, because, you know, I had a great husband and good friends, but at 3 a.m., they were all asleep, you know? And God wasn't. And, you know, at my lowest, most tortured point, and in the absence of people, God was my light. And yeah, I mean, I experienced his presence, and I honestly don't know what I would have done without him. So, yeah, there's this one verse that it's from Micah 7:7-8, and it says, but as for me, I will look to the Lord. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. Rejoice not over me, O my enemy. When I fall, I will rise. And when I sit in darkness, the Lord will be a light to me. And so I think that's what I experienced, you know, like God heard me. He saved me. And now also, you know, because all of my idols, a lot of my idols, I'm sure I have more, but a lot of idols that I was looking for joy in, even good things like, you know, my kids or my husband or my church involvement, stuff like that. But those were all idols in my heart, and all of it kind of failed at one point. And so I think when I experienced God's faithfulness and grace, it began a shift, and of course the shift is still happening. I still get off track a lot, but now I know that by the grace of God, I can get back up even if any of those other things fail me. So even if something goes bad with one of my kids, even if something with, just whatever, like God will still be a light to me and He alone will be enough. And so I think that's where now I at least know the truth. I don't always live in it, but He's the only deep, true, unfailing source of joy.
Mm, that's so good. So the last thing I got for you, Laura, is I was thinking about 2 Corinthians 1:4. And it says, God comforts us in all our affliction so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So I just wanted to ask you, are there any quick words on ways you've seen God use this story and what He did for you to be an encouragement or to be of help to someone else? Was there a purpose for all of this, not just for yourself and your family, but for others outside of yourself and family?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that mental health is a major issue for a lot of people right now. And I think as I've, you know, just with friends or just sharing my story and my experience, there have been some friends, especially like younger friends from our church, but people who have asked to come over and talk with Adam and I about just, I mean, some of the things they're struggling with mental health and figuring out how to move forward. So I think for people who are struggling, it is encouraging to hear from someone who's been there, like that there is hope. And then and maybe even get some specific tools, although of course there's, you know, I don't have answers for people, but just to kind of walk with them through it. And I think Adam has been able to help their spouses, because I think that can also be a really difficult and heavy role as a spouse of someone who's having a mental health crisis. But then last thing, that verse that you shared talked about us being able to comfort others in any affliction because we've experienced His comfort. And so I think my mental health crisis and kind of that intense stripping and breaking softened my heart so that I'm more able to enter into other people's pain than I was before. And I think because God was so merciful to me over and over again, and because remembering the love and mercy of God is now one of my biggest tools for fighting my anxiety that I still sometimes feel now, you know, it's kind of become one of my go-to lenses for looking at life. So I think maybe I'm able to take what I learned in that season and hopefully be an encouragement to other people struggling, because the truth that we need is the same, you know, like God has unconditional love and mercy for us, and He's willing to give His presence to anyone who will humble themselves and turn to Him.
So Laura, if there's someone listening to the episode and they're like, man, I think I'm pretty much right where she was, you know, do you have just quickly a word of encouragement or a resource or a section of the Bible, just anything you would point them to where they could find some of the help that you have found?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about is in Hebrews where it talks about, you know, we don't have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who is tempted in every way just as we are, yet without sin. So let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence. And so I guess that's just really quickly something that I would say. I think with mental health for, especially maybe for Christians, but there can just be a lot of shame. That, you know, one can, I know I felt at different times of like, you know, is my faith just not strong enough or whatever, but that's actually not God's heart at all, because He is so, He's so near to people who are struggling, and He understands our temptations and our struggles and our pain, you know, and He has so much love and mercy. So I guess that's a passage that has just been encouraging to me, that God always moves towards us, not away, ever.
Yeah. Well, that's so good. Laura, thank you. I appreciate your story and just how honestly and authentically you've put it forward. I really... I'm so grateful for that, and grateful that we get to do this podcast together. to our listeners, we're super glad that you are listening to this episode. We hope that it's of help to you. And I'm already expecting that we're going to get a lot of emails saying, why don't we just drop John from the podcast?
No way.
Laura every time. So anyhow, I promise you listeners, next time you will have a real host hosting this known as Laura, and then I'll bumble through my part of it. But I do thank you a lot, Laura. And for our listeners, Leadership Edge is about helping people where they're at now to get to where God wants them to get to in the future. It's all built around what we call the life vision statement, which is by God's grace to step forward as God's man or woman in my spheres of influence to serve his purposes for his glory. So if you want to know more about Leadership Edge, you can go to our website, www.lead-edge.com. That's lead and then a dash and then edge.com. You'll find all kinds of free resources there, and you'll also see how you can sign up for our next mentor training cohort, which we'd love for you to be a part of. So with that, we'll wrap up this episode. Listeners, thanks again for being with us, and Laura, thank you again so much for sharing.
Listeners, if you would like to find out more about John's thoughts on life, leadership, and mentoring, please go to the Leadership Edge website at www.lead-edge.com. Or if you have questions or ideas of topics for future podcasts, please reach out to us at lai@lead-edge.com. We look forward to hearing from you.